is Abundance and Prosperity, Including Money, on Monday, October 29th.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, as Andy mentioned, it is questions and answers. Remember, we decided to do questions and answers at the end of the month so that everyone would get their questions in. But before we start that, I would like to talk about something briefly, and that is that this whole teaching is God-oriented. And any time that I seem to get off track, I was doing some thinking after a couple classes ago, and I wanted to make that absolutely clear, because I say many things sometimes, but you have to remember that this is a God-oriented teaching. That does not necessarily mean that we do not recognize other teachers. We recognize all the great masters. Religious science has taken all the truths from all the different religions and from all the different philosophies and compiled it into something that will work for everybody. And the whole idea of it, of course, is this law of cause and effect that we talk about, that you can cause something in your life by the way you are thinking, and that we respond to this thing we call God. God responds to us, but it's completely God-oriented. So we also, in religious science, say, yes, we believe in everything that Jesus said, but very little that's been said about him. We're never taking anything away from him. We do not recognize Jesus as a savior. This is not a Christian teaching. Many people think that metaphysics is a Christian teaching. It is not a Christian teaching. We like to consider it more than a Christian teaching, because we do encompass the teachings of Jesus, but we do not look at anyone as a savior or an intermediary to this thing that we call God, because we are all connected personally to God. Remember, all that we are is God, but we are not all that God is. So we're always going to come back to the idea that God is the main source of our supply, that God is our life, because we live, move, and have our being in the life of God, in the mind of God. There is only one life, one mind, and that mind is God's, and we are some part of that. Remember, God is not in us like a raisin in a cookie. We are in God like a wave in the ocean, and we all make up. Every wave makes up that ocean, and the whole ocean is God. So with that, ask a question. Bill, you had a question a way back that you wrote on a piece of paper. Oh, excuse me. I'll get to you. She wrote her.
Since this is about abundance and money,
yes.
I'm in a situation now where I'd love to hear some inspiration. I am finalizing my divorce, and I am in escrow in a townhouse. And I'm in a situation where my other house that's on the market is not selling. So I am cashing out my security and my savings with faith that it will work out to put it into this townhouse, because I need to get out under this divorce agreement by the end of the year. And I am I'm trying to be in faith. Because there's a lot of outflow that's
right.
going on right now, and it keeps going. Like tomorrow, unanticipated, I have to have a structural engineer come in because there were some unanticipated issues in this place, and I'm just trying to stay in the faith. So
right.
I'd love to talk about that.
All right, and that's exactly what we do, and we want to stay in the faith. When I said earlier this is a God-oriented teaching, this is when you go right back to God as the source of your supply. If it's for a new job, if it's for the money, then you sit down and you realize that you're always moving from your good to your greater good, that you're always moving from glory to greater glory, and you sit and you say, thank God, I have the money to be able to do this. And I'm not afraid of putting this money back into circulation, because I know if it goes out, more comes into me, even more money than I can ever think, you see. And then you relax into that. You know that you're being divinely guided, that everything will work for your highest good. We always get nervous when money's going out. If we lose our job and we have a savings and stuff, we're, oh, look how fast it goes. Look at this. It won't come back. Well, you have to change your mind about that and realize, thank God that I have that money and I'm using that money now in this situation, knowing that that money will go out, multiply abundantly and come back to me. And I have it to do that. So I consider that like priming a pump. You know, sometimes you have to prime a pump. In order for the water really to flow, you have to put water into it. And when you pour the water in the pump, it pumps more water out. So what you are doing is you're taking the water that you have saved, you're using that right now, you're putting it into the pump, and the pump is going to bring you even more money. But you stay in that faith that God is your source and your supply. You must remember to divorce yourself from money. When I say divorce yourself from money, you are not your money. It doesn't. Money is not your security. Money is not your security. It's a wonderful thing to have, but it cannot make you secure. It cannot make you secure. Only your faith in this thing that we call God can make you secure. And then you start to see everything happening. You change your mind about the money going out. You say, ah, I'm delighted I have it. I know that it's coming back. You change your mind about saying your other home has not sold. You have to wake up in the morning and know that the home is sold, that it's already done. And you hold that in your mind. Anytime the thought comes up, oh, well, nothing's happening, you hold in your mind, already done, already done, already sold, and your property will sell. It will not sell as long as you say it's not selling. You say it's not selling because it's a mirror. You're getting back what you're putting out. So as soon as you change that, things turn around. But always remember that you are being divinely guided and that this thing called God is taking care of you. Yes. Does that help you?
Okay, of the two, I can remember one, the other one I can't remember, but the first one might prompt your memory of the second one. And the first one is, how do I distinguish between surrender and giving up?
Yeah. How do you do that? Well, surrender means that you're surrendering. You're moving yourself out of the way. You're surrendering to this thing we call God because God knows how to do it better than you do. And when you don't surrender, you're saying, ah, I know how to do it better than God. That is not giving up. People think, oh, well, then I'm out of control or I don't have the control or I have to do all the work. You see, I've said for the longest time now, why do you think you have to do all the work? If you had this friend called God, who knows how to do everything, is so powerful and so intelligent, why don't you use God? Remember, God is not only mighty, God is useful, but most people fail to use God. So in a situation like that, you learn to let go and you say, ah, but you know better and you know how to take care of me better than I do. So I will surrender into that. Surrendering is like falling backwards knowing that you're going to be caught. And this you have to remember. Remember in the Bible it says everlasting arms. The everlasting arms of God are always there to hold you, always there to grab you, always there to protect you. And that's what you do. So you move yourself out of the way. It's not giving up. It's moving yourself out of the way so that you can allow new ideas and new situations and new people and stuff to come into your life and make it. Does that help you?
Somewhat.
Well, what doesn't?
I'm not sure what it is about when I feel as if I'm surrendering that I also feel as if I've given up.
Well, you have a residual thing from left over from when you were a child and you went to church and somebody told you something. You have to go back and find out what that belief is and just let that belief go.
Some sort of self-determinism or something?
Yes. You have to let that go. We think so many things we've learned when we were children that are not true anymore, but we hold on to them because somebody important told them to us, or we just hold on to them because everybody else is holding on to that same idea. And you just give that idea up, you see? Just say, at this age, at this time in my life, this is not serving me. So I'm willing to give it up.
I guess I'll just add to that, too. Like, when I'm thinking of the surrendering versus giving up, sometimes I view surrendering as, show me what I need to do to take the action steps. Like, I can't sit here and I can't rest on my laurels. And I'm willing to do the work, but I don't know what the work is to get me to the place I need to be. So when I'm in my surrender mode, if I'm thinking right, and I'll say, well, I'm praying for the guidance to do the right step, as opposed to sometimes if I want to just give up and just say, I'm going to move over and let God take care of it. But I know I need to do the footwork. I just need to surrender to figure out what that footwork is. And that I don't always have the answer. And that's when I kind of need to look at the answer and say, I don't know what footwork it is. I know I need to do something, because if I sit here and I rest on my laurels, God's not going to just take care of it. But then I need the guidance.
Right. And you get the guidance
of where to go.
And that's what you do. You have to realize that your life is always in divine right order. You always take the right turn of the road. God always makes a way where there appears to be no way. Then you move yourself out of that, but you have to do something. And you get confused, you don't know what to do. So your next thing is to know that. And then to say, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know you do. And I know that you will supply that answer for me.
And I told you about that.
Yeah. And it happened right away, didn't it?
It happened in the same day.
Yeah.
Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, so now remember that and use that to bolster yourself. Anytime you... The same way about this idea of getting a parking space. Remember, if you can get a parking space, you can do anything. If you can get a parking space, you can do anything. You know, most people don't even know that they can get a parking space. So if you can move things out of the way to get a parking space, you can move things out of the way to do anything. And if you're ever stuck with something, you say out loud, I am ready for my next step forward. Show me the way. Show me the way. Show me in which direction to go. Then an idea will come up. Something will happen. The phone will ring. Somebody will come in. Now you don't say, well, I can't do that. You have to go right back to, oh, I'm divinely guided. There's the answer. And you go, you see, and you go in that direction. It just keeps unfolding. It just unfolds. We want to know the whole answer to something right away. We want to know every little step that we have to take to get to where we're going. To get over there, to where you want to go, you may go, oh, that'll take me there. Oops, this one takes me. Oops, this goes there. Da, 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 da. But you get to where you're going. You get to where you're going. You know the old story about, and it's true, airplanes. An airplane takes off from Los Angeles and it lands in New York. But the whole time it's doing that, it's off course most of the time. It's off course most of the time. But it goes to its destination. And that's what you see. We as human beings think, oh, we can never be off course. We have to be exactly right in the direction we're going. You don't have to be exactly right. You have to start seeing your life as coming and going and coming and going. But it's getting where you're going. Everyone wants this straight line to something. It's got to be this straight line. Talk to anyone who arrived at what they're doing today or something, and you will see how it went from here to there. You'd have never guessed that you're going to end up there. But you ended up, and you like where you ended up. But it's not a straight line to where you're going. That's what you have to remember. But our mind, the human mind, this little ego mind, wants always a straight line. Once you can. You cannot deviate off. But we do. And this thing that we call God in this universe does it all the time. but it stays in an orderly fashion while it's doing it.
So I don't know if this is the second question or not, but it has to do with the ego mind, since everything emanates from the original what is. Because what is what is.
Yes.
And always has been, because there's no such thing as nothing. And everything that is manifested from the conceptualization of the original consciousness of what is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Therefore, the concept of the ego mind is a manifestation, is from that original consciousness. And I'm trying to understand what is the purpose of that ego mind and its desire to be separate in the plan that was originally conceived.
Well, you know, the ego mind always gets a bad rap. And if you look at the ego mind differently, the ego mind's always trying to teach you something. It's always taking you somewhere to teach you something. So once you realize that, then you don't hate the ego mind so much. You don't hate yourself so much. You realize that the ego mind is trying to take you someplace. Now, why do we develop an ego mind when we come to this plane of action? Because we have to be separate. Even though it's all unity, we have to be separate, so that we can then once again see the unity. If we were all knew that we were all together and saw all the togetherness, we would never learn what unity is. But when we see each individual person outside of ourselves, we say, oh, I'm an individual. So we individualize ourselves with that, with the ego mind. But you can't let the ego mind get out of control and take over your life and so forth and lead you by the nose. You have to see what it's doing. But it's to keep us so we realize, oh, I am separate but connected at the same time, because I'm an individualized expression of this thing called God. Does that help you?
Yeah, and I think it's, I probably asked it the right way for the first time.
Well, there. Sometimes that's what questions are all about. If you don't ask it correctly, you don't get the right answer back from it, you know. So, any more questions, people? Well, I've got little cards just in case.
Well, I have a couple convoluted questions.
I'm used to those.
Like mine.
Now, one is, like in this fundraising I'm doing, I'm getting, which I think applies also to the entertainment field, I'm getting tired of approaching people and being told no, or they don't know they're the owner of the company, and they say, oh, I'll give it to the right person. You are the right person, you know, rather than saying whatever. So you just, that makes me not want to continue and go somewhere else. That's one question. Well, they're sort of tied together. But then the other one is, like, I own a trademark name or something. Somebody used it, and I just wanted to go real easy and not have to go to court or something. So, because that's just more time, more money. That I'm trying to, like, just let go, that it'll happen the way it's supposed to happen. So how do you not get in? Because I know the more you think about it and overthink it, it's also like a no thing or whatever.
Right. All right. So what's happening here is his mind is pulling him back to what we call race mind, or what we call what's going on in the world. Because when these incidents come up, we have to grab them for what we are familiar with. And you're familiar with thinking the way the world thinks. So the first thing when you're raising money is to realize that you're only attracted, and you only attract people who want to give the money, who can afford to give the money, who see the benefit in giving the money. You see, it's that old thing, don't ask for where it's unattainable. Don't go to somebody and ask, you know, it's unattainable, they're not going to give it to you. Learn to go to people where it's obtainable, and then you'll get that. There's a wonderful book for you to get and read, and it's called The Soul of Money, and it's all about fundraising.
The what of money?
Soul.
Soul.
Soul of Money. Let me think. I can't remember the twist. It's a woman. Karen. Maybe it's Karen Twist. The last name is Twist. Soul Money. It's a wonderful book for people who are into fundraising and so forth, and you look at money in a whole new and different way. Okay? Your second question, you must see the outcome the way you want it, and not allow it to go back to the old way that, oh, I have to go to court to get this. So you withdraw your ego from it. Just because they use it, you can excuse that. They didn't mean to use it. It's not harming you in any way, although you went paid for that. You may be paid for that because it's yours, and they took that from you. But don't get into that ego trip where, you know, you're, what's that called? Not competing with the person. Jealousy and all that kind of stuff. Don't know. Oh, the person made a mistake.
Well, they didn't.
But it doesn't matter. You see, you don't. You don't know what the intent was. So just love them, bless them, and release them, and know that you're going to get the money the way in the right and perfect way, not through going to court and proving it. Because see, your mind wants to always make you right. Your mind wants to make you right.
I understand.
Yes, and you are.
That's why I know it's not right the way I'm thinking.
Yes, yes. But see the outcome the way you want it. But learn to love, bless, and release them. And when your mind says, well, they did it intentionally, say, no, they didn't. Say, no, they didn't. They didn't do it intentionally. Because they didn't do it just to hurt you. They didn't do it. You have to get all that cleared from your consciousness. And then the outcome will come. But always, again, it's already done. You have to see the outcome the way you want it to come out. See? And then you don't get entangled with all those things.
I remember the second part of the written question. How do we distinguish between belief and delusion?
Well, how do we do that? Belief.
Because if I believe something to the extent yes. that I really believe it's true, if it's not, how do I know the difference? If I'm anticipating in my faith that this is
that's
already
going,
done.
That it's already done. Yeah. That's your faith, and you must hold to that faith.
And what's the difference between that and the delusion?
Whether it's available or unavailable.
Yes. And whether are you using wisdom with it? Is it absolutely obtainable?
Mm-hmm.
And is it reasonable? See, we ask for things that aren't reasonable. Your mind cannot accept them. Mm. You see, and people are all that, I want to be a millionaire by tomorrow morning. That's not reasonable. I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm saying that it's not reasonable because you haven't stretched your consciousness enough to be able to hold that. It's the container you're always stretching, you see. And that's with faith and with belief and what you want. You have to stretch yourself so that you don't see and think, oh, am I deluding myself at all, you see. You can't delude yourself with God. If you stretch, God stretches with you. The whole thing stretches. But it's the container always. What is going on in your thinking, which is keeping you where you are, you're saying. Keeping you small, remember. If you're not getting what you want, your God is too small. And if your God is too small, you have to kick that God out and get a bigger, better God for yourself. And get a bigger, better God, one that can do what you want it to do. That's what this whole thing is about. Learning that God is bigger, 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 bigger than you can ever imagine. And is capable of doing all these things. See, there's no limit to what God can do. The only limit is what your mind says God can do and God can't do. It's done in our mind. So we have to keep stretching our mind and stretching the limit that we have put on our minds. We do that to our own self, the limits. Because there's no limit in the mind of God. It's all there.
Okay.
That help?
Because in terms of what I'm going through right now, it is not unreasonable for me to go within the next 6 weeks, prepare some audition material for a specific audition that could land me
where you want to be.
Nice.
Absolutely. And
that's
a good one to hold on to.
Yep.
And that's not deluding yourself.
All right.
No. Does anyone else here think they're deluding themselves? This teaching is not to delude you. People can get deluded with this teaching. But this teaching does not delude people. It doesn't say, you can have this, this, and this, and none not be able to have it. It doesn't do that. If we're not getting what we want, it's because we're thinking something that needs to be changed. That's the only thing. Remember, we have to always remember that we're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter. We have to know those four items right away. Once we know that, we have a foundation to build our thinking on and to be able to accept wonderful things into our life. But we don't get a lot of things in our life because we don't think we're worthy of them. Somebody else is worthy of it, but we're not worthy of it. See, and we're worthy of everything. Everyone is a begotten son or daughter of this thing that we call God. Everyone is equal. Everyone is equal. There are no, God never shows favorites. And when you think God showing favorites, say, what God can do for others, God can do for me. And I'm delighted that that person's making all that money. I'm delighted that that person has this, that, the other thing, because it opens the door for me to have it also. It opens the door for me to have it. And then you build your consciousness that way. You build your life around those items, and your works every time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
As a practitioner, when you counsel people who are trying to manifest something, and they're on the verge of manifestation, and they know that they're worthy, deserving, completely lovable, and that they matter, and yet there's something blocking them, What's the one thing you do as a practitioner to help them get unblocked?
The one thing that I do to help anybody is I all see it for them already done. And I hold that in my mind. See, that's when I tell you that I hold all you people in the highest of esteem. I see all you people succeeding. Therefore, you must succeed. You must do that. You must live up to my expectations, because what's known in one point in mind must be known in all points of mind. So I can hold that because I have nothing invested in it. So I cannot be shaken from that. But you can be shaken from it because something else comes up in your life, you see. So you take it personally. You see, I don't take it personally. If you start taking it personally, you cannot do it. This thing we call God is impersonal. Is it, you know? That help you?
Yeah.
You have to see it all the time. Let me read this card quickly. Bring something up like that. Our universe has an impersonal design and an invisible divine energy, but it intimately connects all souls within it. See, we're intimately connected, not only to God, but to each other. But God must stay impersonable, because then God would say, I like Andy better than you, Dallas, so now I'm going to give Andy more than I'm giving you. And God cannot do that, you see. God cannot do that. Why? Because all you are is God, but you're not all that God is. So if you can have it, I can have it. Everyone can have it. Because we're all connected and we're all God, you see. So, just learn those things.
Well, it's amazing how sometimes it just gets ingrained from such a young age that somehow other people are entitled to this, and you're not.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's so deep, you know, it's so deep. And at some level you say, you know, worthy, deserving, total level, you matter. And yet, and then there's this part of you that's saying, it's okay for you to get it, but it's almost assumed that I'm not.
Yes, and that's very good, because now you're learning to watch the movements of your mind. You're becoming a witness to your own thinking. So then you start to change that, and you say, yes, I learned that, but it's not embedded in me that deeply that I cannot get rid of it. I do not have to live with this for one more day. I can put this down. This is the way I used to think, but I don't think that way anymore, because I know I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and I matter. So any time you throw this up in my face, I'm going to tell you to go back to the nothingness from whence you came. Then you immediately sit down and you forgive yourself and you forgive the person who put that thought into your head, because they did not mean to do that. It was put into their head by somebody and they just passed it on to the next person. That's what we do. We pass things on to the next person. All people do that, by the way. And we say, and you've heard this one, if you're abused, you become an abuser. And that if you learn something from your family, you teach that to your children. That's what it means when it says the sins of the father are revisited on the son. The son had nothing to do with that. He watched maybe abuse going on. Maybe he was abused, but now he starts to abuse. He starts to think these things. Then he passes them on to the next generation. So you have to make it stop with you. And you forgive yourself and forgive those people that did that to you or to anybody else. And you then break the chain so that it's not carried down to the next people. But our minds always want to do that. It's ridiculous. And I'll give you a great example that I read this years and years ago, and I thought, oh my God, this doesn't make sense. But it did. We talk all the time about this, about pedophiles, and about men taking advantage of young kids. Well, there was a scoutmaster somewhere, and he was taking advantage of young boys for three generations, because the grandfather, you see, was molested. He sent his son to be molested also, and that son sent his son to be molested, because that's so ingrained in them, and it happened to me, so they pass it on to the next generation. They finally got rid of this scoutmaster. Now that's a big one. I'm only using that to show you how little things, everything gets passed on to the next generation. So be careful if you have children and so forth, what you show them, what you tell them. But let them realize that this thing called God is the source of their supply, and that they're always in good hands, and that you know how to manage your money, and money is not scarce, and money doesn't grow on trees, but you have tons of it, you see. Teach children that, and then they won't have a poverty consciousness, and they won't have this thing, oh, I don't deserve it, I don't do it. Remember when I told you about years ago when my sister-in-law came to Georgia to visit me? I took them to Phipps Plaza, her and her, my brother and their two children, and I said, oh, let's go into Gucci. She said, no, we don't go into stores like that. They're too expensive for us. I grabbed both of the children and I said, come on, we're going to go through the store. And she stood, her and my brother and her stood outside while I took their children through that store. It was too expensive for them. Now that's going to be passed. I tried to break that. If not, that's passed on to the generation without even knowing it. They say, you walk by, oh, too expensive for me. Too expensive for me. You see, it's so subtle.
That's such a good point, and I'm right in the middle of that now, because I am, because of all what's going on with the finances and transitions that I'm going through with the house, I'm going overboard on the other side with, no, I don't have the money for that, or I'm feeling like I'm becoming really miserly in the day-to-day living. And yesterday I had to take my au pair and my daughter to an event and I'm talking about, oh, the train ride's $10, you know, I don't like where I'm going with
yes.
this. I'm going overboard because of all these major expenses over here.
Yes.
I'm going overboard on sort of the day-to-day joy living, and I'm passing it on. I'm not just thinking it. I'm saying it.
Yes.
And I need to get out of that.
Yes. So get out of it. Realize now what you've done and forgive yourself and forgive everything, and then go back and do that and sit down with your daughter and so forth and say, here's what's happening right now, but don't worry, we have money. Everything is going to work itself out. Right now, we may be a little tight, but that does not mean that it stays there. Remember, there's always the reversal of fortune. You never stay where you are. You have to move out from things. So this is just a situation. So your daughter can learn from this situation. She can see how strong you are, and she can see, oh, finances come right back and money comes right back to me. But it doesn't come back when you get stingy,
yeah.
you see. Now, it doesn't mean also that you run out and spend thousands of dollars to make up for that. But you don't. You don't say, oh, it's going to cost $10 and make $10 sound like $1 million, you see. So,
and it's unreal. It's
unrealistic.
Based in reality,
it's
that
not
I can't pay
it.
The $10.
Right.
It's the way the thinking's going.
Right.
And I'm verbalizing
well,
it.
Sure. And that's always, you see, it's always the way the thinking's going, you see. So you have to say what? Money's always freely circulating in my life, and I always have a divine surplus. And yes, I'm using wisdom with the money that I have, but I know that I will always have enough money to do what I want to do throughout my entire life. That money is always my friend. Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up on that, because it's kind of funny, and I've kind of put it aside, but she reminded me of it, and I find that I still do it every once in a while to catch myself. When I was growing up, my dad actually made decent money. I mean, we were like middle class people, and he would spend pretty freely. We'd all go to the movies or go to a show or something, and he had, you know, we'd go on vacations. But certain things, he would go, my mom would want to maybe replace the washer, and he goes, I don't have washer money. And he would actually say, I don't have washer and dryer money. But then we would go and spend almost that much. All going out.
Yes.
And he would categorize things like that. And I found myself doing that and going, like, I was going to buy some silverware and replace my silverware, and it was like $60 or something at Target. It wasn't like some, I'm going to be buying silver like at, you know, a jewelry store. It's just like, you know, flatware. But, and I went, oh, yeah, I really don't have silverware money. But, you know, I'd turn around and go out to eat with my girlfriend and spend $60 that same week.
Yes.
And I would find that I would do that. And I think we kind of categorize that, oh, I can't afford that. It's not that we can't afford it. It's just we think we
yes.
can't afford that.
Right.
And it's just she kind of reminded me of it. And it's so stupid because it's like the money is there.
Right.
We just decide, oh, we can't get that.
But
like
you,
the Gucci thing. You know,
yes.
I can't, oh, you know.
Well, I can't go in there. But you also learned that you were handed that by your father.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely something he said.
See, it's not you. Most of the things we're doing is not us people, it's somebody else. Remember,
right.
You must learn how to run your own life. Are you running your life or is somebody else running your life? Most people's lives are being run by somebody else. What do I mean by that? Usually it's being run by your mother, your life. Because you think, well, my mother, how did my mother handle this? How did this happen? Mother, 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 mother. Instead of saying, oh, how will I handle this? How can I do this? I can be more efficient than my mother, you're saying. I can figure this out differently, you're saying. And then you start to think for yourself instead of just, oh, mother did it this way, this, this, da, 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 da. There's a wonderful story about people just doing things. A young girl got married, and she was making a roast. And the husband watched her, and she cut a little end off the roast. And he said, why do you do that? She said, because my mother always did that. So he said, well, that doesn't make sense. So the woman calls the mother and said, why did you do that? She said, well, because my mother always cut the end off of the roast. So they called the grandma, and they said, why did you always do that? She said, because the pan was too small. But you see how we pick up things? We see something, we hear something, we pick it up without knowing. There's no logic behind it. There's no logic behind saying, I don't have washer money. You say, it's all money. It's all the same money. I don't have, I can do this, but I can't do that. And we do that. We do that with ourselves and with our money. But learn to think for yourself. Learn to say, what am I thinking here? And not, what will my parents do in this situation? What would my mother do in this situation, you see? Otherwise, we're just repeating their lies.
Metaphysically speaking, then, how do you not lose yourself and your identity and your separateness in a relationship?
Ah. When you're in a relationship, it's very interesting. Let me see if I can do it this way. You should always be in a loving, caring, sharing relationship where you are free to be who you are and you allow the other person to be free to be who they are, and you both encourage each other to be the very best you know how to be. But when we get into situations, intimate situations and so forth, and with boyfriends and girlfriends and so forth, we start to lose ourselves in the other person, depending what they're a dominant character and so forth. When we start to do things their way, we start, and you lose yourself. Now, I call that being eaten up alive, piece by piece, bit by bit. And finally, you don't know who you are. And you don't know who you are because they've eaten little bits and pieces of you. See? So, my suggestion always with that is, find somebody else. There are tons of people out there who want to be with you, and there's tons of people out there who want to encourage you and so forth and don't want to do that to you, you know. So don't let that happen to you, because they just eat you up bit by bit, piece by piece, and it's so slow sometimes you don't realize it till the last bite. They take the last bite and all of a sudden you have no idea who you are.
And it's not a question of one sex or the other being the dominant.
No, no. Has nothing to do with that.
But maybe you, as that person, maybe that's your issue. Maybe you find people that eat you up.
Well, yes. So why don't you change that and say, I no longer do that to myself. I find people that want to be with me. And I want people that want to be in a loving, caring, sharing relationship where I am free to be who I am and the other person is free to be who they are. See, and then you... It makes a much better relationship. Much better relationship.
But as an addict, that comes into play.
Yes.
That addiction.
Yeah. But we get addicted to almost anything.
Right.
Yeah. So, don't be addicted to that kind of stuff. But be your own person always and think for your own self. How many times have I said you may use any of this information as long as you don't say this is what Dallas said? You may take anything I say and turn it around and claim it for yourself. I don't want people going around saying this is what Dallas said. I want people going around saying this is what I say. This is how I'm thinking. Otherwise, there is no good to it at all. You don't want to become me, and I don't want you to become me. I want you to become yourselves. And take this, take any thought and expand on it and make it yours. Change it any way you want till it makes sense to you and use it for yourself. That's what it's all about. I've often been in classes where they just regurgitate everything that the teacher said. Well, that's not learning, and that's not being yourself, you know. And that may feed the professor something. That may feed his ego. But it's not doing you a bit of good. You have to be able to always be able to think for yourself. You have to remember that you have a good mind. Why do you have a good mind? Because you have the mind of God working in you. And that mind of God is individualized in you. If it wasn't individualized in you, then we would all be thinking the same thing. We all need each other. We come up with one idea and somebody adds to it and they expand on that and we keep going with that. That's that whole idea of networking and the whole idea of brainstorming and all that. It takes us all to do it. It takes us all to do it. You see, my mind can't think in every little corner and direction, but somebody else says something, oh, well, that makes sense, and then we we're all working together to expand our consciousness. And that's what that's what we're here on this plane of action for, is not only to love, learn to love ourselves unconditionally and everybody else, to have fun, but to expand our consciousness. We have to learn to expand our consciousness. When I say expand our consciousness, into what? That we are wonderful human beings, that we are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter, that we're one with this thing that we call God. This is how you expand your consciousness. Otherwise, you shrink right back to believing what the world is telling you, and that you have no power whatsoever, and everything is outside of you. I ran into a man this morning who said to me, well, in my country, you know, we're having all the rains, and you're having all the fires. And I said, yes, that is the way it seems to be going. And he said, well, that's just the way God works, isn't it? I didn't say a word to him. It's not the way God works. It has nothing to do with God, you see. Nothing to do with God. But people think that, you see. I often think, who would we blame everything on if we didn't have God?
George Bush.
Well,
maybe. That's what everybody does.
Well,
they blamed him for the fires.
Well, yeah. Did they?
I actually heard a statement.
And they blamed him for Hurricane
Katrina.
Oh, they blamed him. Oh, well.
So which, actually, I have a joke that the White House accepted responsibility for the Katrina disaster, saying that the storm was originally intended for Hugo Chavez and veered tragically off course.
Well,
it might take a moment, but...
There is a laugh in there somewhere. But no, be yourself.
Or
learn to express your own self and see yourself and hold your own self in the highest esteem and know that your ideas are good ideas, that your mind is working wonderfully well for you. You know, we often think, oh, well, that, they have better ideas than I do. You know, I once had a friend and I do everything and I said, why don't you think of something? He said, oh, your ideas are always better than mine. I said, no, they're not better. You have to start coming up with ideas also. You see, once you start coming up with ideas, you can come up with tons of ideas, but make them yours and learn to live your life the way you want it to be. And it can all be done. It can all be done. But it has to start with you and inside of you. And you have to see yourself as the wonderful, magnificent person that you are. You have to remember. That you're made from stardust. We're made from the star, all the stardust that happened at the Big Bang we are now is in us. All those little particles are now in us. We are actually made from stardust. So why is that important to know? Well, it means that we're all made from the same stuff, that we were all created during this period, and that we are what's called luminous bodies. We can see each other. See, if we weren't luminous, you wouldn't be able to see. I'd be dark, or I'd be dark energy. But we see each other. So we must have to emit light. The only way you can see something is with light. So we're emitting light all the time. Know that about yourself. What did this person, Jesus, say? I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world. He wasn't pounding himself on the chest and saying, look, I'm better than you are or anything. He was saying, look, I am the light of the world. I am shining forth into the world. And you can shine forth into the world too. So, but we close ourselves down and we think we're nothing. We're not. Remember that. You're shining into the world and then shine your love, your ideas, into the world. Into the world. And it's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.